Good morning to everybody. At least it's morning when I started filming this. I am Frank Vaughn. It is August 5th, 2026. And I want to tell you, I'm cautiously optimistic this morning. There's going to be a bunch of caveats that come with my cautious optimism. But let's get into it. First up is Iran set to emerge with more Hormuz leverage than before the war under draft U.S.-Oman deal. There's no way to spin this, though you will see the White House and you will see members of the administration try to spin this as a victory. Iran's going to come out of this deal, if it's agreed to by the United States and Oman, with full control over the strait, because even though the talking point might be that the Iranians control inbound traffic and we control outbound traffic, within the context of the deal, the Iranians can veto anything they want. They can interdict on any transport they want, and they're going to be able to charge their service fees, something Trump said would never be allowed to happen. So the war, like I've been saying all along, is a strategic defeat, and that's fine. That bell's already rung, and we can't unring it in any way that is available to us. We can only accept what's happened and move forward from here. And the reason I picked Zero Hedge is because Zero Hedge is very overtly pro-Trump. Their coverage is pro-Trump. That's one of the reasons why I read them, because they are a good, I would say balanced, but largely friendly to Trump source of information. I also read sources that are not so friendly because I'm trying to get a balance. The Russians are covering it much the same way. Hormuz deal to give Iran greater control over shipping. It's actually Axios they're citing. But it's an RT article. The U.S. is aiming to announce an agreement on reopening the key waterway today. The outlet has reported Tehran would gain greater control over shipping through the Strait of Hormuz under an interim agreement being negotiated by the U.S., Iran, and Oman. Axios reported on Wednesday. Now, the United States is not involved directly in these negotiations. This is being hammered out between Iran and Oman, and the United States might be talking to Oman, but Iran is not interested in what U.S. opinions are, and I'll tell you why. We have to face reality. I believe there's a greater chance of this sticking than the MOU and sticking longer term. Now, there's, like I said, caveats. One of the biggest caveats is Israel. We'll get that out of the way right now. Israeli war goals have not been met. Nothing has substantively changed. The IRGC still controls Iran. They are in a very good position. They are militarily effective. They shot down a Reaper drone in the last probably 36 hours. They interdicted against one tanker, blew it up. Three others were turned around. They clearly control the strait no matter what CENTCOM, which has been politicized under the Trump administration, says. Iran is in a great position. And they're also in a position to extract war reparations from the Gulf states, whose the security umbrella that the United States promised to give them in exchange for an agreement when it comes to the nature of the petrodollar, it's in shambles. The umbrella is leaky. U.S. bases all across the region are abandoned and damaged, and I would say likely will never be rebuilt, because the very foundation of the security arrangement has been violated by the fact the United States was in no position to defend those states. And I need you to understand, there's good news. Believe it, there's good news. And just to go through some headlines, this is the Center for Strategic and International Studies. We covered this briefly, but this is another one from July 31st, six reasons why the United States is low on munitions. We're not just talking about interceptors. We're talking about the standoff munitions that have largely dominated the United States military effort against Iran. That is, their planes fly close to Iran and they fire their munitions into the country. There's this idea that American planes are just flying over Iran. That's not happening because the Iranians are militarily still effective. They have burnt through their advanced munitions, so they can no longer conduct. They could do more bombing for another few weeks, and then they're at zero. There's nothing left in CENTCOM. And this is open news to anybody who wants to look and actually see the truth. It's not just me saying it. There's like this one, number three. The industrial base was designed for efficient peacetime production, not surge. The United States is not in the position it was during the second Gulf War or the first Gulf War, the first Gulf War in particular, where they were able to field hundreds of thousands of troops, and they had the supply for hundreds of thousands of troops. The United States military has been tooled down. And though Trump makes the claim that he rebuilt single-handedly the U.S. military, it takes a lot longer than the term of one president. It takes a decade to actually successfully rearm, especially when you have weapons that are very technically sophisticated, very expensive. We're not talking about low-cost munitions. There's a sign, or there's signs, that the U.S. military's doctrine is going to change towards low-cost drone and drone interceptors, because that's where the future is. Tanks and advanced weapon systems and Patriot missiles that cost $2 million a piece, that's not the future. That's not the future. U.S. military weapon shortage shows few signs of easing soon. It can't. The industrial capacity is not there. It's going to take time because they've been depleted so far. I don't know what this was. This was another one that was related. U.S. has used up virtually all of its missiles. The Telegraph, the Atlantic. Why is the U.S. running so low on weapons? Well, it's pretty easy, Atlantic, because they're using them all. U.S. has used virtually all of its long-range precision missiles during the Iran war, sources say. Generals leaking this to the press. Trump team's muddled messaging on a munitions shortfall. Trump keeps saying there's all kinds of ammo. Certain types, yes, dumb bombs. If you want to fly the B-52s over, if you want to fly your F-35s, your very expensive F-35s that can be grounded by a chip off their paint, if you want to fly that over Iran, where they will be targeted by the S-400 anti-aircraft system or any other number. We've now got, as I showed in my last video, the Chinese are willing to give the Iranians 400 man-pad shoulder-mounted missiles, which will be capable of hitting a lot of American fighter jets. Like, Iran's done the heavy lifting, and now America's adversaries in the world are going to capitalize on the vacuum that's left behind. The Middle East will not be the same after this. It's a strategic defeat. And it needs to be, because we got to move on from this. Like I've said before, the empire always had to come home to North America and focus on North American problems. We got everything we need here. Hell do we need to be over there sorting out millennia-old ethnic and religious issues. We don't need anything to do with it. Americans' arsenal runs dangerously low as Trump war drags on. Is the U.S. running out of weapons? This is NPR. This is JINSA, Arsenal of Procrastination. The United States must expand munitions production, not merely replenish. These are not doves. These are hawkish people saying the industrial build-out of the U.S. military must be invested into the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars in order to ramp up production so that the United States can rearm. This is MSN. U.S. has used virtually all of its long-range precision weapons. I mean, everybody's covering this. Pick your poison. Even Fox News is talking about it. Now, this is a piece of good news. Trump rejects Zelensky's request for more Patriot missiles. And the U.S. president has also cast doubt on allowing Ukraine to manufacture the interceptors under license. This is mollifying to Russia. This helps to keep the Russians from doing what it is they probably need to do, which is hitting drone production targets in Europe itself, not just in Ukraine. Now, the United States doesn't have Patriots to give to Zelensky, and they're not going to have Patriots to give to anybody for a long time, not South Korea, not Taiwan. Not a lot of their allies or Saudi Arabia, who have taken a lot of these over the years. Like, if you actually break down American production of PAC-3s and where they've gone, a large portion of the production of these weapons have gone to other nations. The United States can no longer afford to do that. They have to keep it at home. And that's probably a large driver of why Zelensky's on his own. At the same time, Russia sanctions bill, a new pressure tool aimed at India. The vote is not just about Moscow's crude. It's a warning that Washington's coercive toolkit can be turned on New Delhi whenever it wants. So on the one hand, the Patriots aren't going. But on the other hand, the United States is still conducting itself and still sanctioning Russia in an effort to try and bring it to heel, which it can't do because the Asian world is moving away from the United States. It's moving away from treasuries. It's moving into its own sphere of influence with its own international settlement layer, with its own reserve currency. The multipolar world is coming. The only thing that we can do is make North America strong. It's inevitable. Europe is already weak. Europe is already defeated. They got a lot of work to do. We can't do the heavy lifting for them. They have to figure out their baggage on their own because we have enough work to do back here. The cool thing is North America is surrounded not by two oceans, but by three oceans, one that has a big ice cap, especially in the wintertime. It's easily defensible. It's easily fortifiable. That's what we need to focus on. We talked about this. Well, this is just another thing. This is the weird relationship. There's Laura Loomer meeting with Chief Rabbi of Ukraine, Mosh Azman. And basically, all of this is PR to try and diminish the fact that the neo-Nazism of Ukrainian nationalism is a non-factor. So there's this really weird alliance right now between Zionists and the Ukrainian regime, which is filled with neo-Nazis. Really strange. I don't know if I want to get into that so much today. This is just good news, too. Florida's no children at drag shows law upheld by federal appeals court. That's great for Florida. But here in Canada, we have to be careful how we talk about this because of new bills. I don't see, when it comes to Bill C-9 and when it comes to these so-called anti-free speech bills, I don't think it stops us from having the speech to say that we disagree with this nonsense, but it certainly stops us from being, from certain types of speech directed at individuals. So there's going to be activists out there that promote this nonsense. And you are not going to, you're going to have to be very careful how you speak to individuals. My recommendation, if you don't want to run afoul of anything, is don't block libraries. Don't stop people from access. If they want to take their kids and look at this, well, I guess that's their problem. Don't stop them from doing it physically because you're going to get charged with some kind of hate crime. And if you're dealing with one of the radical activists as a person, don't speak directly to them. Do not engage in invective directly at them. You have to speak about the philosophy behind it. You have to speak about the ideology. You have to speak about the big picture. You have to avoid direct confrontation with individuals, even argumentative. And you can still exercise a large degree on speech. I don't think children should be anywhere near drag shows. And there's no one going to stop me from saying that. Here's another reason why I believe the United States, like I said, I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm not fully optimistic because once it's understood, because the United States affixed its signature to the Memorandum of Understanding that was in place for a very short period of time and violated that Memorandum of Understanding first. That's just the fact. They violated the MOU first. And it seemed to me, listening to what Trump was saying and looking at his social media, that he didn't even understand what it was he signed. And my understanding is, and again, I mean, you can't believe everything you read, but if you sign a document, you put your signature on it, you would think you read it. But my understanding is that, and it makes sense, the president's a busy guy. He's at the top of the heap. He's doing all kinds of things, including golf tournaments at his own clubs. He has time off as well. He relies on aides to give him summaries. He doesn't actually read a lot of the things that he signs. He's given advice. So he may not have understood what was in the MOU, which might explain why he violated it and why he walked away from it. He may not yet understand that this deal between the Omanis and the Iranians is actually giving the Iranians full exclusive control with Omani advice of the Strait of Hormuz with the right to charge services. He may not understand that yet. And we have seen before multiple times where peace is announced and a deal is at hand, and then within days we're back to bombing. Now, all the munition shortages I talked about, those are still very real concerns, but there's the needs of politics and the needs of ego, and sometimes they outweigh the logistical reality of things. The United States can engage bombing again, probably for the last time. And he may decide to go that route because he doesn't like the deal. It's not going to change the outcome. It may happen. There's also the Israelis and what they're going to do. You can bet your bottom dollar that even though they played hardball over the last couple weeks saying to the Trump administration, if we cooperate with you this time in another bombing and attack campaign on Iran, you have to publicly agree that you won't back out before it's finished on our terms. They played hardball that way. But that doesn't necessarily mean they want to let the United States off the hook, walk away from the region, and conclude some kind of deal that leaves Iran in control of Hormuz. That is distinctly against their national interest. So they're kind of a wild card, which is why I say cautiously optimistic. Like, I'm like, I don't even want to say I'm 60-40 on this one. It's like 50-50. It could go either way, which is more than I could say about any of the other iterations. The ceasefires to the ceasefires to the ceasefires to the ceasefires, whom the only thing they all had in common was the fact that there was no ceasefire. This is another reason, though, why. U.S. has 43-day emergency buffer of crude oil left in 45-year low. This is very real. The American president, Donald Trump, loves to tell the public that America doesn't need the world anymore. That they control all the oil. They don't need anybody else. And it's just not true. They can be a net exporter of oil, but they still rely on 6 million barrels of oil at qualities and grades that they cannot produce at home to keep their refineries pumping. The United States is still dependent on the global oil supply, which is why prices at the pumps in the United States have not stayed low in spite of the fact that Trump says they've got all the oil in the world. They have a lot of oil, but they don't have the right kinds. They need the Persian Gulf just like everybody else does. That's why it's a global oil market, and that's not an easily solvable thing. This is a hard barrier. It's not just gasoline. It has to do with the fuel that goes in the jets that do the bombing. The United States is in a very precarious position. Trump has led the United States there. Trump vowed to bring free speech back. Judges in 75 cases ruled that he has stifled it. Now, you might not like AOL. You might not like the mainstream media. But this judge was appointed by a Republican president, Ronald Reagan, somebody that Trump likes to deify. He ruled in September that the administration illegally detained, deported, and revoked visas of foreign students and faculty because of their pro-Palestinian advocacy. This is another. The Trump administration has engaged, and this is why Israel is still a wild card in my mind, they have engaged in a screening process that not only looks at U.S. citizens, but looks at people trying to get into the United States and asks, are you sufficiently pro-Israeli? And if you're not, you don't get in. And if you're not, you might not get that government job for simply having an opinion that, say, the ethnic cleansing of Gaza is wrong. The ethnic cleansing of Lebanon, which is ongoing, is wrong. These are pretty easy things. These are pretty easy moral positions to take. But you're being screened based on your speech. And it's actually, there's more cases against the Trump administration for that than there was against Biden. That's just reality. This is another sign, like Trump needs to get out of this thing at least for the next 3 months to get through the midterms and try and scrape some kind of Republican victory together, which I think is still possible. If there's a focus on domestic issues, if there is a redrawing, there might be enough time to kind of pull it around. And the fact that, as you'll see, the Democrats are still kind of nuts. Ronald Lauder, a billionaire GOP backer, closes his wallet. Ronald S. Lauder, a major funder of conservative political causes, has not given a single dollar this year to Republicans in his home state, and his super PAC has gone idle. Nobody wants to throw good money after bad. There's a lot of people in Republican circles that detect there's a lot of trouble coming in November, and they're trying to save their dry powder, maybe for a later fight. This is another reason why the war needs to come to some kind of conclusion for at least, like Trump, I saw this morning, he's talking about another 60 days of understanding, another 60-day ceasefire. I mean, how many of these are we going to go through? There's a lot of reason to be pessimistic. But in spite of the rhetoric and in spite of what he wants politically, there's a whole pile of logistical and supply-based reality that is piling up at his doorstep. And you can't ignore it forever, because what will happen is you'll just get to a point where there's a catastrophic collapse that you can't hide, and it'll wake everybody up. If you want to keep at least 30% of the population that still approves of your presidency, if you want to keep them in line and you want to keep them repeating the talking points, well, you better smooth out that drop. You better, you know, be able to spin that up the right way. And that's what I think. I think the U.S. is running out of runway. And here's what I'm talking about. Abdul al-Sayed wins Michigan's Senate primary and major victory for Democrats. Progressive wing? I mean, I'd call it the socialist wing. I'd call it the top-down social reengineering wing of the party. But that's where the Democrats are. And that might be the one thing that saves the Republican Party or could save the Republican Party, but it depends. If you're an independent in the United States and you're looking at it fairly, you can either vote for the party that puts a foreign nation first over the needs of Americans and puts a foreign war fought on behalf of that foreign nation ahead of the needs of Americans, or you can vote for these radicals that, well, they're radical and they'll fundamentally change the characteristics of the United States, or at least that's what they want to do. Or you can vote for them, the Democrat Party, saying to yourself, it will put a check on this administration and these foreign entanglements until we get to 28 and we can come up with a different way of voting. Maybe the Republicans get a good candidate post-Trump to try and put things back in order. This election in 26 is about judging the first 2 years of the renewed Trump administration. It's not about picking a direction. It's about making a judgment on how things have gone, typically in American politics. Doesn't look good for the president, but at the same time, I'm not going to scroll down because this is a bloody mess. Paris Hilton taken to hospital after live streaming self-harm. You got people engaged in self-mutilation. You've got people engaged in basic denial of reality. You've got hardcore socialist thinking turning the United States into basically a communist post-republic is a good idea. You've got radicals of all kinds influencing your kids through social media and TikTok, turning them towards the most destructive behaviors. The supposed, anyway, social conservatism of the Republican Party, the attempt to give voice to some semblance of domestic sanity might be their saving grace in November. But in order to get there, in order to get to that sanity, in order to first you got to get out of the war. And then you got to deal with the fact, and I don't know if there's any politician in the United States that actually wants to bring it up during an election cycle. 1 in 5 U.S. tax dollars goes to servicing the debt. The deficit is out of control. At a time when the military is going to have its hand out, not just for $1.3 trillion, they're going to need a lot, hundreds of billions of dollars, to actually rearm the military in the way the military is built. Someone's got to come along eventually and say, look, if we want to have a globally scalable military, we got to do it a lot cheaper. F-35s and expensive aircraft carriers are not the answer anymore. We need drone carriers. We need autonomous warfare. We need what's being pioneered in Ukraine. We need the weapons that Iran has used to defeat us. And we can do it a lot cheaper, and then we can take that savings and we can invest it back into the United States and into North America, because see, that's what's coming up too. You're going to have an administration that has, at least behind closed doors, understands that it lost the war in Iran, that it's in a bad situation. It's going to be looking for easy victories elsewhere. And when the focus comes back to North America, you've got Cuba, you've got Canada, you've got Greenland, you've got these things you can focus on. If somehow the Republican Party can survive in November and move things forward, then those issues are coming up with a lot of consequences for everybody who lives here. So it's not like we're going to be running out of exciting things to talk about anytime soon. I'm Frank Vaughn, and I'll see you in the next one.